Hi, and welcome to episode 66 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask, From Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to walk the cursed earth of indie comics this week are writer, artist, and creator of the kick-ass superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who just called himself Brother Eye is Tony Esmond.
I wasn't going to call him Scatman Butcher. We just made a blank one. Scatman
Butcher. Oh, yes, yes.
Love Scatman Butcher. You'll have his first album on vinyl.
What was the name of that one, Tony? What was the name of that album?
Oh, God. Give me a minute. I can't remember something.
Is it Two Cubicles?
It's called Sitting on the Toilet Like a Little Bird. That's how I did it.
Oh, dear. Hello, folks. Welcome to this week's show. We don't have a guest this week. There's just three guys sitting in the dark talking about comics. So that's what it is. That's the plan this week. You know, I mean, we've got some cool books to talk about. We've got a quite magnificent comic. You know, it's an event comic, isn't it? That isn't one of our reads this
week.
It
is.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got an event comic to talk about, which I think deserves to be talked about. Be prepared for the boys to show some love, and I haven't read it yet, so I can be the devil's advocate. I love being that.
You've looked through it though, haven't you?
I've got it digitally because okay. I mean, we won't spoil it for you yet, but you folks probably know what it is when we say it's seemingly sold out everywhere in the stores.
Yeah, I had trouble getting it big time.
Yeah, and the comic.
Yeah, it has gone to second print, I think, hasn't it?
Yeah, they're going to do another print.
Oh, really? Yeah, cool. Oh, well, that's one of my questions already answered. Anyway, so that's soon to come. Yeah, lots to look forward to on this week. And also, we've just been rambling before the show started. we're in a bit of a spicy
mood. Filthy. We are.
So who knows where this one will go.
There's more dirty toilet talk.
Yeah. Yes, Tony Esmond is back, folks. Aren't you glad?
I was here last week, I forgot about that. I did listen to the show and I really liked it. It did really well. In fact, it was better without me, to be fair. Even I would admit that.
Oh, we missed your tone.
Yes, we did miss you. Mate. As did Ryan K. Lindsay, who's a wonderful guest and will definitely have back so that you can talk to him yourself, Tony.
But he didn't shout pork pie. I sent him a message saying, just randomly shout out pork pie. Do you remember we were going to shout pork pie out one week and we never did it?
No.
And we had a bet on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he shouted. Yeah. I was a bit disappointed. I was waiting for him to shout pork pie all the way through, but he didn't. I'd like him to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pork pie. Are you just making up for it because we haven't said it for the past couple of weeks?
No, we have to try and put it in another couple of episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like pork pie.
Yeah. This inside joke that no one will like. Yeah. Yeah.
Say something weird. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Although we like Ryan, so that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We like everyone.
Not everyone, do we?
No.
They don't need to know that. Anyway,
behind the curtain now.
Yes, this show is The Great and Powerful Oz, and whenever they see us at conventions, they can see we're just a bunch of little old men.
Yeah. Furiously working the mechanisms.
Furiously what? Oh, working. Right.
Okay. Working the mechanisms.
Anyway, we're here to talk about comics. That's why this show exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Tony. Come on, you've been away. Come back strong, you know.
Oh, okay.
You know, Rocky lost in the first film, but he came back and won in the second.
It was all right, though, wasn't he? He got married, though, didn't he? I like that he got married.
Yeah, yeah. He was all right.
Yeah,
he did all right.
I like the Rocky films. I think they're about underrated.
It depends which ones you're talking about.
The five wasn't very good,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, you can't say five's good.
Oh, yeah.
I like four, though.
Yeah, that guy got... he was a bit of a strange one, wasn't he? It's kind of like... He was kind of marked out as the next big thing, and... He was basically just sleeping with loads of people unprotected and got...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
bloody hell.
I think he got AIDS.
Do you know what?
Yeah, I know.
You know far more about Rocky V than I ever thought possible, Dan.
Yeah.
But, I've got quite a good knowledge of most 80s action films.
Oh,
it's one of the things I admire about you.
Do you know what? Yeah. Do you know what? I think in the future we'll have to do a weekly quiz.
On 80s action films.
And actually, here's an idea, just off the cuff. God, this is just brilliant. People, send us your questions about any 80s film, and we'll do one a week and see if Dan can answer it.
And it's got to be, you got to attach
80s action films.
Scatman Dan.
Are you up for that though, Dan?
Yeah, I'll give it a go.
Yeah,
we like that.
If I can't do it, I'm sure you guys can hoover it up.
Yeah, you keep sending me gifts of people taking their shirt off anyway, so that'll be right.
Oh dear. Anyway,
it's what we do, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
So roll.
Speaking of taking our shirts off, what comic do you want to talk about this week, Dan?
Oh, that's nice, smooth. Yeah. I like the ones that make no sense. They're my favourite ones.
Yeah.
I've just given up. What's the point of sense?
Yeah, you like coffee. What comics have you reading? Comic Book Fever sent through to down the tubes, and it is a book that I completely fully intend to buy in New York at the Tomorrow's table. It's written by George Corey. Have either of you seen this?
No,
never heard of this
one. No, it's you know Tomorrow's, do they do sort of history of comics and they do spotlights on creators and stuff like that. They've done this book. George Corey is a regular writer for them. He wrote The Extraordinary Works of Alan Moore, which is very good, and also Kamota, the Marvel Man Companion, which is also very good, which came out. I think they both came out from Tomorrow's. And this is called Comic Book Fever, and it's a celebration of comics, 1976 to 1986. So that 10-year span that takes up a big chunk of what we know now as the Bronze Age. We all know when the Bronze Age ran, don't we? It ran from 1970 to 1985. So it's a big chunk of that, and it's a big chunk of my childhood as well, you know? I've got it in front of me. It is absolutely just one big sort of grab bag of nostalgia from that period. Here's some of the things that you've got in it. You've got there's sort of spotlights on some of the creators who are sort of big heavyweights during that period. So you've got Neil Adams, Marv Wolfman, George Perez, Alan Moore, Jim Starlin, which I'm looking at the moment. I really think Jim Starlin needs more credit because he is absolutely brilliant. I'm a big fan of his sort of cosmic stuff. Really good. And also started on Master Kung Fu, which is one of the reasons I love him. Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, who is much lauded amongst artists, isn't he? Because he's a great artist. He did some marvelous stuff back then. The Buscema brothers, that pompous ass called Chris Claremont. There's a bit of thing on him in here. have you ever spoken to Chris Claremont at a convention?
I would have ever spoken to Chris Claremont at a convention.
He's done Bristol because he's a bit of a sort of Anglophile, isn't he? This is where I'm going with this. So he does quite a lot of English ones. Yeah. But he's one of those blokes who, when I first met him, he was American. Now I think he kind of pretends to be English when you hear him speak.
Really?
He's a bit bizarre.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think he was born in England, like Islington or someone like that, I think. But then he became American and then he just sounds English again. But he's got like that sort of fake English accent, you know? Slightly affected thing. But anyway, there's a thing on him. Allegedly, according to the Marvel History of Comics, he was a swinger. I don't know if that's true.
Is that the kind of thing they put in History of Comics? Because
Yeah. So when they do one about Scatman Butcher, there'll be quite a few little things there, won't there?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Too many to list.
Isn't the swinger a Spider-Man villain? Oh, I just got that completely wrong.
Be good, wouldn't he? Yeah. Too busy shaggy.
There's bound to be some sort of superhero or supervillain called the Swinger, isn't there? From a simpler time when they don't realise what those things were.
The tagline for that issue of Spider-Man would be Target Mary Jane, the Swinger. Parker's face alarmed.
It's a goldfish bowl full of car keys and the Swinger going, put them in, Mary Jane, or your mother gets it.
Face it, Swinger, you've hit the jackpot here. Yeah. You know what I mean? She takes her leggings off. I'm thinking leopard skin velour leggings for a swingers party. What would you wear?
Is that what you would wear?
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Amazing. You'd kind of look like, you know, the Kenny Everett show. Do you remember when he did that that Rod Stewart impression?
I don't have a mullet. I do have hair like a gold waterfall, which is very similar to his hair.
Yeah. It's true.
It's weird. I've pondered a lot of questions in my life. Never, what would I wear to a swingers party?
You don't need to know because you've been to a number.
Yeah. Just turn up. Sometimes it happens. You're not planning for it.
Yeah, no pants. That's all I do.
Balaclava.
Just go commando.
Yeah.
Take him out in the car.
What? If Dan goes commando to anything, he's just dressed up like Arnold Schwarzenegger from the film Commando.
Yeah, he just, if you've gone commando, yeah, I'm carrying this tree.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, good.
Weren't we talking about a comic?
Anyway,
yeah.
back to the comic book fever, which is really good, I have to say. So apart from that, it does like new. It's loads and loads of articles all put together in a lovely. I think it's 253 pages, as I recall. It's, yeah, 253 pages, all colour. So amongst all these sort of little spotlights on different people when artists and writers from back then, you also get like interesting runs from the period. So there's something about the Byrne, Claremont, Austin, Uncanny X-Men, which is obviously a favourite of us all. Something on Wolfman and Perez's new Teen Titans. There's a sort of kung fu themed section. There's a look at early Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stuff, which I loved the early stuff when it was like really raw sort of DIY sort of punk rock stuff almost, wasn't it? You know, Crisis on Infinite Earths. But it also does stuff like it has an article on Hostess Fruit Pies. Do you remember the little strips you used to get with them?
Yeah.
Or people who sold Grit magazine. You remember? Do you remember us kids in England? We'd look at this thing and think, "Oh, if you sell Grit, you get £450." So I didn't really know what Grit was. No. But it was, I think it was like a newspaper,
the thing
wasn't
is,
it?
Tony, you're talking about a lot of things that were never in the comics when I read them.
See, right, I did get some of that. Like when he had the Three Musketeers chocolate bar. I've never had one.
The Three Musketeers. I always wanted one of those whenever saw it in the sort of Spider-Man comics. Yeah.
Yeah.
We know what you mean.
Yeah, thank you. There's some great stuff in there as well. Like there's actually the pictures of Kiss. We talked about this a few weeks ago, didn't they? About Kiss having their blood taken so they can put into the special that they did, into the ink. There's a thing on Alice Cooper and how he appeared. There's a thing about Mile High Comics, and there's a big picture of the Mile High Comics collection and a couple of pages of the adverts, which, when I was a kid, used to get in the middle of comics. And you go, oh, Daredevil, you know, $1.20 is $1. I can afford that, you know. Yeah. You never used to send off because it was America, wasn't it? You know. Yeah. Really, really good book, put together with absolute complete love and care by George. I spoke to George about it recently. I was hoping he was going to be at New York and we could do an interview with him, but he's not. But so I'm probably have to. Tomorrow's always have a table full of absolutely brilliant stuff at that convention. I'm a big lover of their stuff, and I have mentioned it in the past. Here's some of the titles that Tomorrow's do. So outside of Comic Book Fever, you've got Jack Kirby Collector, which is really worth a look. Alter Ego, which deals with sort of Golden Age stuff. And it's all history of comics, but amongst it, you get like a lot of examples of concept sketches and original art and stuff like that, you know?
Hmm. Nice
comic book creator. Yeah, Comic Book Creator is really good. Back Issue is probably my favourite. I subscribe to that through Orbital. And then you also get like the Modern Masters, which if you're an artist, are really worth looking at, because it's artists talking about the sort of the growth of their style and how they work and stuff like that. And there's specials on Paolo Rivera, Cliff Chang, John Byrne, John Romita Jr., Carl Baker, Mike Ploog, the mighty Lee Weeks, who's brilliant. Eric Powell, I know you're a big fan of his, aren't you, Vince?
Yeah.
Guy and Alan, both Guy Davis and Alan Davis. And there's some really great stuff they're putting out. And it's always well worth a look. And then they do a sort of companion. So they do a history of certain areas of comics. They did one on Silver Age Sci-Fi, Hawkman, which is a really good one, actually. Marvel Comics, they do a specific book on the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, just talking about the history and the way everything evolved during that period. Thunder Agents, Star Reach, and absolutely brilliant stuff. So go to Tomorrow's, TWOMOWROWS.com, or at Comic BK Fever, and you can have a look at some pages that George put up there. And he's a really, really interesting guy. He knows his stuff. This is done absolutely. I mean, it's got a thing on, the 100-page giants, on Treasury Editions, Elf Quest. I mean, every fucking chapter is another bit of memory, you know, especially for me, someone my age, you know, late 20s. probably like it. Yeah, really, really good stuff. Yeah, that's my one, dude.
Nice. Excellent. Nice. So what about you, Dan? What have you got this week?
I've been busy again this week. So
you're always busy, Dan. You're a busy man. Saving lives.
I know both of us have been doing the A Place to Hang Your Cape pin-up. We'll drop some details about that later, but it's for a charity calendar. And I've been doing some work for Ned Hartley's Punchface comic.
Oh,
so,
cool.
I've been banging him out.
Yeah, the best named hero ever, Punchface.
Yeah. So I've gone back to some classics I haven't read in a few years, and it's Scott McCloud's two books. I'm the only aware of the two. He's got Understanding Comics and Making Comics.
Now, yeah, now before you go any further, Dan, I'm going to say something that might surprise a lot of people.
Go on.
I've never read them.
Really?
There you go. Okay. See? No, I've always wanted to. They're on my wish list, but I just never got round to it.
Okay.
So
you're an easy Christmas present this year, aren't you?
I'm saying nothing, but yes.
Yeah.
Take it away, Dan.
Books are kind of for me a masterclass in understanding comics and the creation and the storytelling aspects and why you're doing stuff, what rules are there, and he's got an understanding of the rules, and through the kind of the books, which are it's a comic themselves, the way they draw them, and he uses examples from manga and various other comics from around the world, and everything's covered in here, from like time bleeding off images, drawing emotion. They're fantastic. I really recommend, if you're a comic creator, even from an artist to a writer, you can get so much from it. There's a section in the book that I scanned, which has a breakdown on faces and emotions of like this face and this face equal like outrage or something. And it's a nice little cheat sheet I've got on my phone. So if I think, right, the character needs to do that, I can quickly reference it and see what kind of creases and muscles I need to be kind of pushing to get the reaction or the emotion I want from it. And it's worth it just for that. I mean, there's a whole chapter on it, and this two-page spread is only like a tiny little bit of it. But it's a fantastic series of books, and I've just started working my way through them again because I've not read them in a few years, and I feel like I need to kind of revisit them and see what lessons I can kind of pick up from them.
Did he do one about internet comic or e-comics as well, or something, didn't he? Or
I don't know, actually. I'd be interested to see one if you did.
Yeah.
I'll take note for that.
Yeah. You surprised me, Vince, just sort of going back to what you said there, is that because his style reminds me a little bit of your style in a way. So have you ever read Zot?
I've read a little bit of Zot. I mean, I'm not completely, it's not like I've never heard of these books. I've always known about them. And I remember, especially when the heyday of when I first was getting the 90s with the Wizard age, shall we say, Wizard was at its peak, they would always talk about it. And they had sections, I think they might have been sections taken straight from the book, and they printed them in Wizard, you know, and they had interviews with Scott McCloud and stuff. So, and those were always interesting whenever I read them, and I always knew how important this book is and how so many people have learned so much from it and use it like a Bible, really, you know.
Yeah,
it is that kind of stuff. But I haven't read much of his stuff either. I really want to read his latest one. Is it The Sculptor? I've forgotten what it's called now.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've not read that either, actually. Yeah, I must read it.
That's critically acclaimed, isn't it? But
I really like Zot, actually. Zot's a great little series.
Never read that.
Yeah, it's quite fun. Yeah, I think they put a collection out a couple of years ago. I think of the first 20 issues.
He did that first, and then he did Understanding Comics, did he?
Yes, he did. Yeah, and I think he went back to Zot very briefly after that, didn't he? Because I think the first 10 issues are coloured, and I think the next lot are black and white.
Okay.
Yeah, you can see the influences between the two, but yeah, very good it is.
Yeah,
yeah, quite overly simple, but with a little bit more meaning behind it. You know, a bit of sort of Bone-esque type thing. You know.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you guys have a lot of books on writing or making comics?
Yeah, quite a lot. Yeah,
I've got more on writing than making comics, I would say. I've got art books, but not necessarily sort of how you make comics and stuff. No, I've got books about script writing and a lot of like screenplay type stuff as well. But nothing really.
We could do one every so often, couldn't we? Just review one.
I think it benefits. I remember. Yeah. Was it Pat Mills brought up a book that you then read as well, didn't you, Dan? What was it called?
I did.
Yeah, I've read it as well. Yeah, Story.
The Story. That's it.
Yeah. I think no matter what medium doing, whether it's comics, films, you know, prose, just read everything. You know, you can't stick yourself in this small bubble. You know, everything will help you, I think.
I think read everything, but don't take notice of everything.
Yeah.
It's the old story, isn't it? There's that little element of creativity that makes you different from everyone else. You need to maintain that, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I think all this like writing to five or three act structures, and you know, I think we need to be careful these days because things are becoming a little bit similar. You know, you can tell people who write to the advert break almost, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of great stuff out there. Peter David's book's very good. Alan Moore's is very good.
There's one book I've read relatively recently called, I think it's Save the Cat. Have you ever heard of that one?
Oh, no.
It's like a screenwriter's, you break down a film into this, and basically all the big Hollywood blockbuster films.
I've heard about this,
Are all kind of like, you can follow this formula to it. And
right.
There's so many points recently that I've watched the film, and then like all these key moments have got like the names within the book. And it's like, oh, that's a Dark Night of the Soul. And there's a bit in the film where a character is at wit's end. They've lost everything just before the big finale where they get it all back. And there's a hint of a whiff of like death in the film. And it can be very subtle. And one of the examples it gives in Elf, near the end, where he's kind of, everyone's turned on him. And he's on a bridge, and he looks over the edge like, as a hint of like, he's going to throw himself over. Obviously he doesn't, and he won't. But they have it like, when you start seeing this in films, you're like, right, yeah, that's that. And it's kind of, it's like a look. I'm not sure if I like it, because when you look too hard at stuff and how stuff's made, you can unmake stuff when you're watching it very easily. And it kind of pulls me out of stuff.
I think if you watch a lot of mainstream movies, you can almost dictate the script sometimes.
Yeah.
The amount of things I've said, you know, you watch a film and you know almost what they're going to say at certain points.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Or you can, there's a lot of foreshadowing. You know, you can telegraph when someone's going to die. Or you find this with a lot of television as well.
Yeah, especially detective stuff. You know, she's done it. She's, you know, there's little selling points, aren't they? She's a reasonably well-known actress or actor. Yeah. You know, she's introduced at a certain point. You know, to come back again, and you think, well, that'd be her then, wouldn't it?
Are you basing all of this on Columbo? Is that what you're doing, Tony?
Oh, I'm having to watch Castle, aren't I, at the moment? And that's all. You can guess it in about 10 seconds, that one.
I'm trying to remember what it was, but I was watching a film the other day, and it'd done, like, foreshadowing, but it was like a double bluff. So what you kind of expected to happen happened, but then it went on, and it was kind of subverted, and it was really well done. I didn't see it coming. It's also the reason I don't really watch many trailers apart from the first one. Because I can pretty much piece together what a film's going to be like just from the trailer. They show like
the language of films, we know it. Well, certainly blockbusters, aren't we?
Yeah.
You know, we know the language of a blockbuster. We know what's coming and what's happening, how it gets set up and what happens to him. And now he, you know, there's all this sort of thing. We always know these sort of things, don't we?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I think
on rom-coms, you know what's going to happen, don't you?
Yeah. Like with the Doctor Strange thing, like it's going to be injures his hands, loss of life, goes, finds the mysticism. I don't know what's going to happen after that, but you can pretty much.
But that's what I like about those. Those trailers, I quite like, because you see these big events, but you don't know how it's going to play out. Yes, we know, you know, the hero's going to win in the end. You know, that's what happens in these films. But they don't really. I think there's so much of that film that we haven't seen yet that I'm so looking forward to. It was the same as Civil War. Civil War did a similar thing, I think.
See, that's why I like watching, like, pre sort of 1985 movies, or you know, indie movies, because they don't have to play to that structure. You know, it's just a load of people at film school who love making films, and they go off, especially especially sort of horror movies, you know, the Italian and, you know, horror movies that they make, they just don't comply. A lot of the older, more classic zombie films, you don't know that's going to happen in the end.
No,
you know, and I prefer that. I prefer to sort of, I sometimes think a bleak ending works better than a happy ending. You know, it sticks with you longer, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
When they remade, was it Dawn of the Dead, which was the, you know, and they're on that boat at the end. That really stuck with me. I thought, oh, my God. Yeah. You know.
But also, I think we've had so many bleak endings, especially with horror. I mean, we're getting completely off topic here, but horror, I think the bleak stuff can sometimes be overdone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a cheap way to end a horror film, you know, like, oh, the killer comes back, or, you know, everyone dies in the end.
Yeah, cliched endings. Yeah, I don't care. I like everyone dying in the end. Don't you?
Well, when we were talking with Ryan K. Lindsay last week about doing massive spoilers for Negative Space, his ending on that book was fantastic. Like, he thought it was going to go bad for this guy, but at the end, it's so fucking bad. You couldn't have seen that one coming. And that twist really kind of like, that's really good.
Yeah.
Because you knew it weren't going to end happy, that guy with that sort of level of depression where he wants to kill himself in page one. But how tragic he made it was like, oh, fucking hell.
I think they should end porn films with a sort of bleak end.
Tragedy.
You know, you don't get that sort of happy ending and everyone's sort of looking at each other a bit uncomfortable and think, you know.
Happy ending.
Good.
Mm. Anyway, so understanding comics is good.
Yeah, we should read that, yeah.
Yeah. Tight.
I like the way we started this. We said, we haven't got a guest, let's keep this show tight. Well, that's fucked in the first five minutes, wasn't it?
Well, you know, maybe, folks, this is a taste of things to come.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. Foreshadowing.
Trust me, by the end of this show, it's going to be fucking bleak. And everyone will be dead.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just be cranking away, rocking away in a corner. Like a little monkey.
Like a filthy little Blair Witch. Like, carry on Blair Witch.
Strangers.
Oh, dear.
So, Vinny.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Vinny. Vinster.
Yes. My ones are more conventional. I've just got a normal book this week. I say normal. It's a dark sort of crime procedural book that I got a little while ago that called Snarl from Insane Comics. Yeah, have any of you heard of this?
No.
Have you heard of Insane Comics? They've been around for a little bit. I think they've done some work with like Stu Perrins and stuff. I think they're quite they're a sort of bigger publisher. I think they're an American publisher. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen their stuff on, photos of stands with their stuff on in shops.
I really like their logo. I know, you know, just from a design standpoint, I just think it's quite a strong logo. But anyway, this comic, Snarl, it's very much a sort of police dark thriller with slightly supernatural sort of veins. It's almost like Silence of the Lambs meets sort of Deliverance in some kind of way. If I was going to mix those two.
Okay.
On the back of the book, it said, something sinister is killing people in a Washington State Park. Is it an animal? Is it supernatural? All the evidence points to the unexplained, and a veteran detective will have to go against all of his training to solve the unsolvable before it's too late. Now, that's quite a sort of broad sweeping, you know, pretty sort of generic kind of back of the book kind of blurb. But, yeah. It feels to me, this book definitely feels to me, you talked about those old sort of 70s sort of horror films, those kind of sort of 70s sort of backwoods thrillers, horror thrillers, you know, exploitation sort of stuff. It starts off pretty grim. It's more sort of in the horror vein than a straight up crime story. For instance, you get a bunch of people camping in the woods at night and then they get taken out and eaten by wolves. Not a spoiler, because you know, judging by the name of the book, it's called Snarl. Wolves are quite important in this story. One of the first, and the story's dark, and it, you know, it's very much a character piece about two detectives trying to find out what's going on. There's people are being murdered in horrible ways, but is it an animal? Is it something else? You know, is it a human? It could be anything, and it plays with that mystery up until the end. I must say, I like the way this book ended as well. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to spoil it. I kind of want to talk about all the story, but I don't want to spoil it. But it does have a nice sense. And the creators, I don't think I've mentioned them. The writer is Kelly Bender, who's a Canadian writer. He's written for like Marcosia and like All Turner, and he was runner up in Top Cow's talent hunt. I think. Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The artist is Nathan Kelly. Colorist is Josh Jensen.
So it's Nathan Kelly and Kelly Bender.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's confusing, isn't it? So
on the cover it says Kelly and then Bender. So Kelly Bender's got his name on there twice.
He must be pleased.
Yeah.
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 Now Nathan Kelly and Kelly Bender are the co-creators of this book. They both came up with this. And Nathan Kelly's art is one of the first things that struck me because, and I can't believe I've forgotten his name. Who was the artist on 100 Bullets? Riso.
Eduardo
Riso. If you're a fan of his work, which is amazing, I think very design orientated as well with like heavy blacks and shadows and the way his page layouts are. Nathan Kelly's work is very much inspired by that. He's not afraid of detail. There's buildings, there's backdrops, you know, there's detail all over the shop. And it is very much, it's a work, because it's a crime procedural, it's a wordy comic because it's lots of people talking and trying to figure out things, but then you've got splashes of red, and it does get pretty gory and gruesome. It's 44 pages. It's a one-shot, so it just tells the story. It's one and done, so you can just pick it up and just enjoy it for what it is. There is the only minor thing I would say about it, there's the sound effect eek is used a few times in it, and I've never
I
haven't seen that noise sort of put as a sound effect in a comic for quite some time.
Yeah
it's like someone reacting badly to something but they're saying eek. For me, I'm not necessarily a fan of it, but do you know what I mean? It's not like, if someone's screaming, you know, a blood-curdling scream, I wouldn't necessarily say eek, it was eek, but that's
like a mouse's noise, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a minor thing aside.
Okay.
But it's well worth picking up. I picked it up on Comixology. And like I say...
Yeah, sort yourselves out with your sound effects, fuckers.
you can get it one and done. If you like your crime procedurals, gruesome and dark and twisted, which they pretty much all are these days, aren't they? I mean, whether it be something like True Detective or any of those sort of Scandinavian crime dramas, it's all pretty twisted these days, isn't it?
I don't know how they're going to dial it back from that.
Yeah. Probably with a load of silly sound effects. Boink.
Yeah.
Or something like that, wouldn't they?
Eek?
Is the Preacher TV series, isn't it? The kids are taking the piss out of that guy because he made a noise like a rabbit when Preacher knocks him out.
Yeah.
They call it, "Oi, rabbit guy."
Yeah. Like I love that, though. Great series. But yeah, Snarl from Insane Comics. You know, I think if you like this sort of stuff, and you, especially if you're a fan of 100 Bullets, it feels like a Vertigo book. Do you know what I mean? It surprised me when it was a one-shot story, actually. When it ended, okay, I thought, oh, the story's done. Because I thought it was going to be a mini-series. So, you know, it's win-win.
Okay.
You know, you get everything there. You know, it's like renting a video, and you think, oh, blimey, that was better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you lived in the year 1992, that would have been fine, wouldn't it?
Don't talk to me about living in the past.
I saw an empty Blockbusters, still had the signs up this weekend. I felt a bit sad. I just like going to Blockbusters. Yeah.
You'd always look at a video case. There was no IMDb. You'd just have to take a punt on the cover artwork.
But I'll tell you why a business like that fails. Because sometimes when you go into a huge video store, you want to take a chance on something like weird, you know, something that you don't see everywhere else.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to pay like £6 to have that for 3 days?
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
I know.
And it just does your head in when you take it back late, don't you?
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah, because you think, I'm not going to have it for 3 days, and then you have it for a week and forget about it.
Same reason, trailer for a film. Libraries are wankers.
I like my library. It gives me a heads up of like an hour that my book's going to be overdue. So it emails and says, by the way, your book's going to be overdue. So fucking hell.
Bloody hell. I'll tell you what.
Maybe a couple of days.
I'm in shock. Dan, you still use a library?
Yeah, we've got a nice new library down the road from us. And basically you can go on their website and order a book. And then it'll be in within a couple of days. And then you just nip down and pick it up. Oh, it's brilliant.
That's good. Awesome. I've been using it recently for study because I've had a sort of exams and stuff. And I've had to, I can't study at home because Stan the dog annoys me. Mm. And so I go to the library, and I think it's a really good place to go and work. I really like it, actually. I'm glad we still got them.
I hate it when people talk about them dying off. I don't think... If such a day were to happen, that would be a very, very sad day indeed, I think. Especially like when you go into a library and all of a sudden you see a little sort of graphic novel section, and you feel like, oh, this shouldn't be here. Oh, this is my section.
It's like I don't want to own every book I read. Like, I don't want to own a DVD of every TV show I've ever watched.
Yeah, is it?
So
you consume it and then you're done, you go on. So
unless it's a comic, I want to own that and just hoard it and allow it to fall on top of me and kill me when I'm old.
But that's because you're aiming for that death, though, isn't it?
We've talked about this before. That's how I want to die. Yeah, just with loads of comic piled on top of me naked underneath.
And I'll tell you what, if that ever happens...
Yeah,
I'll admire the work that you've put into that. That's foreshadowing in a massive kind of way, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. Isn't so it? If I die in say 5 years' time, you'll all go, oh, no, listen to episode 66. He said that was going to happen.
Yeah. Why are you going to be naked though?
But, you know, naked.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Just be careful of paper cuts. You don't want to go out like that, do you?
Oof. Yeah. Imagine that.
Make sure you fall face down.
Do a cock push-up.
Where you're buried under half a ton of comics.
Yeah, that'd be good. I can manage almost one. It'd be difficult with loads of comics on your back.
All those master of kung fu's, they're what's doing me in.
Just me shouting, Lico Woo!
Yeah. Oh dear. But from I think from one massive collection of classic comics to another.
We go massive, and then I wonder what you're going to say.
No, that, I wasn't going that far off topic.
Good.
Yeah, from one fantastic collection of comics to another, this week saw the release of quite a monumental comic book event. I think if you're in the UK and you've been aware of comics, then surely you would have been aware of this, even if you didn't read it. Or aren't a massive fan. Of these books, but if you're a fan of UK comics or if you're interested in it, you surely knew that this week marked what happened this week.
Dan,
it was the 2000s issue, 2000 prog of 2000 AD.
Yay!
Galaxy's greatest comic.
How cool is that?
Two thousand issues of a comic. Just that in
and,
general.
Just crazy. Big congratulations to past guest Pat Mills, who started it all off.
Yeah.
Good on him, yeah, and it's still going strong, and he's still in it, which is great to see as well. Yeah,
it was quite.
I think people moan about. Oh, there's no British comics industry. You know, you go to quite a lot of these sort of hipster events I go to. They go, "Oh, this is the comics industry." You know, this toilet paper comic I made, and I think, well, what about 2000 AD? Why are you complaining about the lack of comics when you don't read? You know, one of the galaxy's greatest comics. You know, and it really is, and this is, I think we all agree, one of the best issues, best prog so far of it, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
It kind of fucked me off a bit. I walked around so many newsagents and said, have you got 2000 AD? They don't stock it. And I'm just like, what? You don't stock 2000 AD? I just couldn't fathom that at all. It should be like standard. I presume that the sales are not there, I don't know. But,
I don't know about that. Some W.H. Smiths have got loads. You go to the one at Victoria, there's like a huge stack of them on the shelf. And then you go to one at Blackfriars or the one at St. Pancras, you know, which are big hubs for transport and stuff. You'd think people, you know, on their way home, trains late, grab a copy of 2000 AD. They don't seem to stock them. It's very scattergun, their sort of distribution, I think, at the moment. Yeah. It's a real shame.
I think they're really retailers underordered on this, because I had big trouble finding it. I went in so many shots. My wife had to get it out of a newsagent near where she worked. So yeah, at least I got one. I got one.
I went
into
W8. Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Because I went. I bought all four of the ones in my local newsagent.
That's where I can't find any.
I know. I bought one for myself and three to take out to pals in New York. So
there you go. That's all right. Yeah.
Oh well, that makes sense.
But they're reprinting it, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, they have to. I mean, this has been such a sort of monumental seller, hasn't it, I think?
Loads
of good word of mouth as well.
The one I've got is with the Space Spinner on the front, with Tharg riding it.
Cliff Robinson, isn't it? Cliff Robinson's art.
Yeah, is that was that a giveaway on the first issue, that Space Spinner?
Yeah, the Spinner was. Yeah. Yeah, so that's a great little callback, isn't it? And he's sort of flying into the thrill suckers, isn't it? Tharg riding it.
Yeah.
And there's a spaceship behind them. Or sort of space bus, isn't it, with all the sort of main characters over the years sitting in. So good.
Did it have several different variant covers? Because I bought it digitally, because I haven't been able to get a copy. So I went on Rebellion and signed up for them and got $2.99 for the digital copy, which is 56 pages. That's another thing about this. This is, you get your money's worth on this. And
you really do with this one. Yeah,
I mean, the digital edition does have both covers, but the first one you see is a Judge Dredd by, I believe it's Chris Burnham.
It is, I think, isn't it? Yeah, he's done some Dredd stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did the signing, didn't he? Was it LA or somewhere they did a signing? Mm. A series of signings, didn't they, on the first? And he did the LA one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this particular issue, now normally 2000 AD is one of those, you know, it's episodic stories, isn't it? Like, you know, you pick sometimes if you haven't read it for a couple of years, you pick up an issue and maybe you're halfway through a story, you know, one of the stories in there. But this one is, they're all sort of standalone sort of stories, aren't they? Is that what?
Yeah, yeah. There's well, I think there is, apart from the one at the back. Is it the one that?
Seems to be a regular.
Counterfeit Girl by Counterfeit Girl. Pete Milligan and Rufus Dayglow. I think that continues on, doesn't it? I think. And then there's an advert for, I think, What Comes Next. So, look, ABC Warriors. Oh, no, Flesh is back. Oh, brilliant. That's good. There you go. So, should we run through what we should we run through the creator issue? Is it presented?
Yeah.
So I got the Cliff Robinson cover, which colours by Dylan Teague. Absolutely lovely, brilliant stuff. And then the first page you presented with, what they do is they go through, they get sort of named artists and they go through little histories of the comic. So the first page is basically Tharg sitting in the nerve center, sitting at his desk, talking about the sort of creation of it and what happened and how we've now reached 2000 progs. And it's drawn by Brian Bolland. So Brian Bolland is doing basically a page of Dread Story.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. Mm. Which brings back so many great memories from the first sort of 250 issues, you know, really good stuff.
I mean, essentially, on that page, you only get, I mean, he's on there in a couple of panels, but there's only one sort of true shot of Dread, really, isn't there? You know, in the sense
and
immediately you see why Brian Bolland's Dread is just nothing, like nothing else, isn't it, really?
Yeah, Bolland's is amazing anyway. Yeah. He's just so good.
Yeah. Yeah, so lovely, isn't it? And then you go straight into a Judge Dredd and Johnny Alpha story, with written by John Wagner, art by Carlos Esquerra, and lettering by Annie Parkhouse. And that is just brilliant stuff. So it's a sort of meeting of the two great, you know, most recognisable probably Esquerra characters, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they go time travelling. And it's just a big chunk of fun, isn't it, really?
Have they ever crossed over before?
I think they have once before, haven't they? I'm going to say.
In the story, they've done it before, so I presume they have.
Oh, of course they do, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I think they have. And that's really good. And it's like presented, it's a slightly longer story than normal. Just gorgeous stuff.
I mean, it says on the first page, Dredd says to Johnny Alpha, "Didn't think I'd see you again." So obviously.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
Yeah, carry on.
So there's that. And then you get an advert for something we just talked about, and we're about us going to, is on the 11th of February next year in Hammersmith Novotel, is the big 40 years of 2000 AD festival.
That's going to be brilliant.
Looking really good. So you've got Pat Mills, Pat Sayre, John Wagner, Carlos Esquerra, Alan Grant, Dave Gibbons, Mike McMahon, Simon Bisley, Rob Williams, Cy Spurrier, Al Ewing, Liam Moore, past guest, John Repian, Sean Phillips, past guest. You know, like just absolutely brilliant, iconic names from 2000 AD are going to be that. So I think we'll probably do that as well. That's the plan. And then on the next page, you get as the history sort of runs, you get Tharg walking through a door, and he's sort of explaining, you know, we didn't just do Mega City 1. We also had, you know, different periods of time, and there's a Mike McMahon Slane page.
Yeah. Brain.
Yeah. Brain.
Mm-hmm. With Mike McMahon drawing Slane, shouting, "Kiss my axe." Just, you know.
Amazing.
So absolutely brilliant. And then I'll let you do the next bit, Dan, but then he basically walked through a door, didn't he? And
you're into Nemesis the Warlock, Torquemada, the two sort of eternal foes going at it once again. Like with all the others, you get a real self-contained story, but gives you a taste of what's come before. We mentioned this, like it's a brilliant jumping on point for new readers, and I think marketing-wise they've done so well with this that older readers can come in and see all the little hidden gems and callbacks, and then new readers can get a taste of what's the comics all about and what it's always been about, with the older stuff and the newer stuff coming towards the end. I think they played a blinder.
Yeah, and this just brings it back so much, doesn't it? It's Nemesis in a story called Tubular Hells. even the little musical note's got like a Nemesis face on it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's written by Brother Mills, Brother O'Neill, and Sister Parkhouse. There you go. How good is that? But my favourite bit of that is when Nemesis the Warlock nails Torquemada to a crucifix. You can see where Pat's coming with this. I fully understand that we both went to the same boarding school. And he nails Torquemada to a cross and then throws him through something that does look like a big anus, to be fair.
See you, Doctor.
Yeah. But it's just triumphant. It's just like, it's just so much fun, and it just sums up all the sort of crazy fun that 2000, yeah, sort of edgy crazy fun that 2000 AD had back then. Just brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. What's next? There's several pages. Well, the next one is, I seem to sound not too familiar with that next one, that it jumps into colour.
What, oh, no, that? You've got the page. Oh, that's that, sorry. You've got the Dave Gibbons page, yeah.
Yeah, and that's Road Trooper, which is another one, yeah, of my favourites. It's absolutely fantastic. And he's done, yeah, that so well. I mean, him and Bolland, just, you can see why the kind of, yeah, people poached him early on, because they're absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, great. This is a wonderful example of, like, you know, without any colour, the artwork's still absolutely mind-blowing. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't need colour. I think colour would spoil it. Is that a crazy thing to say?
You're right, yeah.
Doesn't,
especially something
it,
like Fiends of the Eastern Front, which was one of my favourite stories going back in the day. And even that gets a little panel, doesn't it, bottom left? Yeah. Really good.
I mean, yeah, their artwork is so strong in the black and white. The colourist has got to be very careful not to destroy that and only kind of enhance, yeah, it. I'd prefer it in black and white, if I'm totally honest.
Yeah, so, yeah. And so much of 2000 AD used to be in black and white, didn't it? You yeah, sort of luckily got middle splash page, didn't you? It's, yeah, great stuff.
Within
did you get a poster with you?
I did indeed, yeah.
I'll tell you what would be interesting. If there was a version of this, there never would be, but if the whole thing was black and white, just to see some of these original pages without any colour.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be, yeah. Some of them will work better. Obviously, they've wisely done the Nemesis story, haven't they?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this Rogue Trooper story would quite work as well in black and white, because it's sort of quite heavily coloured, isn't it?
Yeah. It seems to rely on the kind of the computer colouring effects and stuff on,
yeah,
it. Let's not say it works against it. It does really well. It's a really good strip. And then you got Tharg jumping back to Dredd's world, and you got stories from the Cursed Earth, the Dark Judges, Sam Slade, Mean Machine Angel.
I used to love Sam Slade, Robo Hunter. Yeah,
Walter, and then back to Anderson, and you're straight into Judge Anderson, PSI Division strip, which Death pops up into again. It's Jen.
That gets a little bit saucy as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, so a bit. Yeah, and then
I can see you're right though. I can definitely see Jen. You know, the faces is David Roach, isn't it? I think, is that his name?
Yeah.
The face he does very like Jen's face, don't they? Sort of that she draws. There is a moment in it. I will say, I did actually do a little bit of double take where Death's sort of, you know, bony, long fingernailed hand reaches for Judge Anderson's breast.
Yeah,
which I think is the case.
Yeah. But then again, though, I suppose they're riffing a bit on the 90s with that, aren't they, I think?
Yeah.
She was a great character.
She was, yeah.
Really Anderson. Good. A good foil for Dredd, as in he's all business and she's kind of not. Yeah. Still a judge, obviously. But honestly, I'm not too familiar with the Dexter and Sinister Dexter afterwards.
Who did the black and white page? Because I love that page.
Colin McNeil. Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's fantastic, that does. Does he do the...
And that's basically... I don't know, what does he do? Then you've got... Basically, with that page, you've got Tharg going, we made a few mistakes along the way, isn't he? Sort of saying, yeah, it was the 90s.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then he's got the... Is it called Space Girls? I forget the name of the girls now. The ones the top left hand there.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone sort of always cringes a bit over that they did.
Yeah.
But
then, like, you know, Sinister Dexter, which I'm not au fait with, but they definitely seem like it says in that panel, that there were characters that stood the test of time.
They definitely have.
You know.
And the thing that stood out for me is that is you go right to the end, and the panel before the end is Simon Davis just does one panel.
Oh, yeah, isn't
it? Yeah, it's fantastic, that. Yeah.
Looks brilliant.
Did he used to work on Sinister Dexter?
It used to be his story, didn't it? Yeah.
Ah.
It was quite it's more earlier 2000 AD things, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Without 2000 AD people shouting at me. But yeah. Yeah. And I really like the fact he just put that one panel in.
Yeah.
Like, oh, nice. Yeah.
Nice little nod.
That's quite a violent story as well, isn't it? I think it's sort of quite sort of sexy violent, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a very LA noir type feel to it.
Yeah. That Simon Davis panel sort of sticks out as well, because the rest of the art is very reminiscent of John Cassady. Kind of, it's got that kind of feel to it. Especially the John Cassady that Uncanny Avengers sort of era.
Yeah,
you know, with the clean colours, you know, because it's quite bright. Yeah,
and it's written by Dan Abnett, but the art is by Mark Sexton. It's good art. Yeah. I really like it. You know,
yeah,
very well done. But I see what you mean. It's got that clean edge to it, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
Nice.
It's onto that last strip of the forget the bloody name of it now.
Counterfeit Girl.
And the Rufus Day Glove. I've not heard of him as an artist, but he kind of, there's some moments where I can see.
Yeah.
Jamie Hewlett, is it? The Tank Girl stuff coming through. And I'm not saying that negatively in any way whatsoever, because I think anyone kind of can work in that kind of style was fantastic. It's brilliant.
There's a little bit of shaky cane in there as well, I think.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
This is another sort of page where it's quite sort of bright neons and bright colours. But I think if you stripped all that out, once again, if it was black and white, there'd be some fantastic, because there's so much detail in these pages.
Mm. Yeah, you know, yeah, there is.
It'd be lovely to see, like, you know, original sort of black and whites of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's not the sort of story I'd read, but because of the visuals, it sort of drags me into it a bit more. Yeah. I think, you know, Rufus Dayglow is quite an interesting guy. Isn't he the guy who's got some Kirby panels tattooed on his arms?
I don't know.
Has he really?
I think he has. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Nice.
You do Bristol a lot. I think you see him at Bristol quite a lot.
Yeah,
there's an ad at the back which is absolutely fantastic.
I love that's like a movie poster, and I'm very much I love that kind of design.
What's that dinosaur called again?
Oh, it's the Flesh story, isn't it? Flesh Gorehead.
Yeah,
Pat Mills and Clint Langley. Yeah. It's not One Eye, is it? Oh
no, that's his mum.
There's Escape.
Tyrannus, is it?
Yeah.
Or
Tyrannus,
yeah. Yeah, something like that. I can remember
reading it. It looks so good.
There's a Dread story, isn't it, where it's about the cursed earth, and then a whole issue is basically about him and his life, and it was fantastic build-up, and then at the end of it, it's like, oh, Dread's now facing off against him. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, so it's basically an advert for the next issue, you know, 2001, I suppose. It says a monster lineup, and so we've got coming. You've got Judge Dredd Gets In by Rob Williams. Rob Williams, great writer, and Trevor Hairsine, who's really good. He's been reading some of his Valiant stuff. Flesh Gorehead by Mighty Pat and Clint Langley. Clint's great in it as well, isn't he? Hunted by Gordon Rennie and PJ Holden. I think PJ do some signings this weekend. I think he might have done.
He did.
Savage is back, so that's great. So Savage has now began interlocking, isn't it, with Robusters and the ABC Warriors. So it's all becoming one sort of Mills verse, and that's by Pat Mills and Patrick Goddard. And Counterfeit Girl, it will be the second story of that. So the second part of that by Pete Milligan. Pete Milligan's such a good writer, isn't he? Some of his Vertigo stuff is just extremely good. And aforementioned Rufus Dayglow. So there you go. So all together, I think you'll agree. Like, what a great issue.
Yeah.
And they finish off with a lovely sort of Cliff Robinson sort of spread, which is there's a collection of 2000 AD characters. Have you got this in the print version?
Yeah. This comes in the centre page. It's a poster.
Right. In the digital, it's right at the end. Now, what I like about this is we all know that lots of people have done massive sort of cast pictures of the 2000 AD characters. There's the famous one, you know, that was used a lot in Future Shock, I think. Is that a Brian Bond one? There's a huge lineup.
Yeah.
What I like about this one, you know, it's fresh, you know, it's a nice sort of fun panel, I think, you know, those two pages. So
you got Ace Trucking front and centre as well. I just love that.
Yeah.
Love Ace Trucking.
Yeah.
So good.
Who was that on the post on the right hand side? There was that the little rodent thing out of Cursed Earth. I think it dies at the end. Crushes the rocks.
Yes. Yeah. I know the one you mean. It's in the Judge Child Quest, is it? Is it in that? Yeah.
It's another heartbreaking moment when that character goes down.
Yeah.
That's another thing. 2000 AD didn't shy away from killing characters off and death. It wouldn't be like, oh, this Marvel character's died. Oh, he's back 2 weeks later.
Yeah. Oh, God, some of their stories are so brutal. I was reading some of the ABC Warrior collections. I got a collection of one as a present for a guy in America when I'm seeing him, a friend of ours. And I was thinking, this is fucking well brutal. There's an ABC Warrior story, and sorry, Robuster story, I think it is. It's about child abuse and Yeah, these, all these hell. Stories. You think, fucking hell, they would never try this in 1977 in Marvel and DC comics. You know.
No. Now I need to ask a question that may contain a spoiler. So, if you're interested in it, folks, just stay. Just put it on silent for 2 minutes. I just need the answer to this. In terms of spoilers, right?
Yeah.
Is Judge Anderson still alive? Because I thought she killed herself.
Yeah, I thought she's dead.
Yeah.
She hung herself, didn't she?
Yeah, I thought she was dead. I was just
asking because I was intrigued by the whole permadeath thing, and Judge Anderson's quite a major lot.
There character. Has been some Judge Anderson stuff recently, though, hasn't there? Yeah. I don't know, mate, to be fair. Yeah. I can't remember. It's 2000 AD people. Dave Broughton will now be shouting at us, won't he?
Yeah, of course he will. But yeah, let us know, people. Let me know so I can sleep at night.
Yeah, so, Vince's phone number is 07593.
Like I'd ever give it to him.
So the next issue, next prog will be out the day after you listen to this podcast.
Yeah. Get on it.
Yeah. There you go. So will prog, prog 2000 you can get online.
Isn't there? Yeah, they're doing a second print. So
yeah. So how the thing is, in terms of, we're going back to like the mainstream shops as well. 2000 AD will only be sort of weekly, won't it? They'll only put that week's issue in. Are there many places that will, for instance, this week,
that last few, you mean?
Yeah.
W.H. Smith, I don't think in the main does that, do they?
No.
I know Orbital have like the last four on the shelf.
Forbidden Planet in Shaftesbury will stack the previous issues behind.
Yeah, they will, won't they?
I think a lot of UK comic shops they're going to be having 2000 AD everywhere, so they'll have some back issues. So get to your local CBS.
I wonder how much this is going for on eBay. If some unscrupulous individuals of...
Yeah, there'll be some variant covers going off somewhere, won't there, rather? Yeah, for all these people who bought multiple copies.
Yeah. Oops. I did like a ticket tout.
She did.
But I bet they probably are, aren't they?
Yeah.
That ain't our scene, is it? No. Not into all that rubbish.
No. I must say, I didn't get a chance to read it because I couldn't find it, and I've only just got it digitally, but, looking through it, it looks like a wonderful issue. It does look like a great issue. And this is from someone who doesn't read 2000 AD weekly. I'm not a 2000 AD reader.
But would you read it if it was that quality every week? You probably would, I would suggest. Would
yeah,
you?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
The beautiful thing about this is it shows the diversity and lots of that there is lots of different stories and different styles. And, that they're all punchy, but beautiful artwork. There's consistency. And diversity. Now, not many anthology sort of titles can say they've got both.
Oh, God, so good. They've got such a breadth of
product,
haven't they? I think what they've done there is they've got some new product in there. They've got a little bit of a history of the comic for new people who are coming into it. But what they've also done is they've cleverly packaged it for all those people who've stopped reading 2000 AD over the years. We'll be walking through the train station or, Sunday news agents or something, and they'll see it and think, oh, look, 2000, this year, I'll buy that. I remember really enjoying that. Mm. And it's got enough of that sort of nostalgia, classic writer-artist combos for them to enjoy it as well.
It's issue 2000, if you think about it. Such a mega event,
Yeah.
There's a couple of people I sort of know from school days who have read comics, and they don't really do it anymore. And they were on Facebook, with their issues, that they'd gone out and got it, especially. Oh,
good. Yeah, that's
so
good.
I was really pleased with that. And... I seem to get tagged in a lot of stuff now. They ask me about stuff, and I say, I don't know. I'm not encyclopedic knowledge of comics.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd love to know.
Tony.
Yeah.
Lifeless Tony.
What kind of encyclopedia series is that? It's like a Kama Sutra.
I just checked it on eBay. There's some dude selling the one with the Dread cover for 50 quid.
What?
For fuck's sake.
And the one with the Tharg cover for 20. I think that's been a bit ambitious.
Look, people, you can get it digitally and they're reprinting it, so don't get mugged off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. 2000, there's going to be more 2000 AD where this one came from. So just have some sense about it. But whether you're a 2000 AD fan or not, we'd love to know what you thought about this issue if you picked it up. I know there's a lot there's a lot of 2000 AD fans out there, but also like we've said, I'm not a reader of 2000 AD, but this looks awesome. So I'll probably do an update soon on what I thought about it. Get in touch, let us know. We'll have to put something on Facebook, won't we, so people can get
yeah it's a good idea involved. Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to the next issue. I think the lineup is really strong still. I think they've sort of held some great strips back, because I think the Flesh one's been written for a while.
Yeah.
And that looks really strong.
It'd be interesting to see, because this one's obviously going to have big numbers. Well, as big as they can be with UK sort of comics, as it were. It'd be interesting to see if they carry that on with the next one.
Tell you what, there's only £3, isn't it, the cover price, $2.95.
Digital, isn't the
not this one, but like an ordinary issue is like $2.95. And when you're getting the jump up from the dodgy sterling, American comics obviously being so much more, I wonder if they can kind of ride that wave of success, that the fact that it's a lot cheaper, you're getting a bit more bang for your buck, as it were. I think so.
You know what 2000 AD do as well, is they package all their backstories really well. So you can go and get the history of Strontium Dog or Bad Company or, Dread or Nemesis or Harlem. I mean, we talked about Harlem Heroes a few months ago, didn't we? And that's still really fresh to read. Yeah. And you can get, and it's not expensive. Even their hardback books are not that expensive.
And I will say, I'm probably more likely to do that. I'm going to read a collection of one story.
Yeah, I'm more of a trade kind of person. But it's 2008, they work so much better for me when they're collected. I mean, I've got nothing against buying the issues on their own, but I'd love to have the whole story. I mean, the Dread stuff, like the Block War, and it's just fantastic when you read it in one hit.
Some of the art as well is just incredible, isn't it, as well? These artists who've come out of 2008, just incredible. I think even in one of the specials, John Byrne did a Judge Dread story a while ago. Quite a few years ago. Yeah, they do occasionally have people in doing that sort of stuff. And I think you can find trades quite cheaply if, some of them go cheaper, don't they, at conventions and stuff. I know used to be the 2008 table would do 3 for the price of 2.
That's a good one. Good
they
deal.
They did it at Thought Bubble a couple of years ago. Yeah, and they're worth getting. There's loads of great stuff there.
Nice. Yeah. So if you see it, get it, people. All well and good. Now, the other thing we're going to talk about this week, Mr. Butcher, the man who's all about comics, he actually wrote an article recently, didn't you, Dan, which got a bit of play online.
Got picked up.
Yeah. John liked it. Read it on Down the Tubes.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Now, before
you'll never get away from us now. You're part of the gang now.
Faustian contract.
They'll never let you leave. Now, rather than me giving it a crappy intro, basically, Dan, what was this article about?
The article was titled Five Things I Don't Want to See in Your Indie Superhero Comic. And it was
that's a bit of clickbait, isn't it?
Oof. Yeah, exactly. I learn off the masters, like lists go down well. And when you think, I've only got to consider five things, that's not too bad. But people seem to like lists, so what the hell, I'll do a list. But essentially it's in response to seeing a lot of superhero comics online and works in progress of people posting stuff up. And synopsis of stuff, and just seeing people doing the same thing over and over again. And just this article is trying to say, just take a moment, look at these points, and reconsider what you're doing. It's never written at any point to sort of have a pop at people who have done this or had considered doing it, just to spend a bit more time on your idea before pushing it out there, because there's a couple of things. One of the points it raises about people creating like rip-off Marvel and DC characters, and it's like, you want your rip-off Batman character to compete with the real Batman character and DC, you've not got a chance in hell. Most people would disregard that comic about even picking it up, because it's just it is what it is, and that work is going to waste. So why not try and take it a little bit further and do something different?
Now, I thought this list, this article slash list was really well written and thought out. It was written, and it was good fun to read as well. But I totally agree with you that the indie scene, which I always sound so hipster when I call it that. But independent comics and stuff, whenever they do superheroes, sometimes I think, that's almost the perfect opportunity to step away from all the cliches, to step away, you know, to just do something that no one's done before. And yet some people just want to do those books.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah, those books that they read when they were getting into comics. You know, I mean, for instance, you always see a lot of books that look like something that came out of Image.
Yeah.
In the Image boom. But I think the way you worded it was brilliant in this. Let's go through some of these points. We're going to put a link in the show notes for this article. You know, we're not going to read it verbatim. This is a topic of conversation for us. And Dan's put it far better than any of the rambling that we're going to do over the next 20 minutes. But let's take the 5 points. So, okay, number one, alley attack. What do you mean by that, Dan?
Well, if you've read a superhero webcomic, you've more likely come across this trope, which is essentially a character, usually it's a woman, kind of taking a cut through a dark alley, and she's kind of assaulted by muggers or whatever, and then out of nowhere the hero appears, beats all the muggers up and saves the day. And it you see it all the time, and it's just really lazy and just needs to be. I mean, it kind of comes from many comics, but I guess you can trace it back to Batman being parents being shot in the alley.
Yeah,
but
and that's not to say, that it's not to say that this particular scene you can't you shouldn't do these or
no.
You know, you can put twists on them, but if it's
exactly
yeah, but if it's
like,
generic,
Sam Webster pointed out that he's got one in his, and it pans out that you're watching a television advert, which is fine because you're playing on the reader's expectations.
Yeah,
kind of and tweaking it and twisting it, but just doing it verbatim like that. And I'll tell you, I've seen it many times. I could have linked to a lot of comics here, but I'm not about kind of linking to people's work so you can hate on it. Do you know what I mean? It's not nice. So,
Well, the thing is, in the article, you've got a scene from your comic, which is someone in an alley about to get attacked. Do you know what I mean? So, but you're referencing how the way to do it, you know, you understand the point of those scenes. It's not like, I hate those, you shouldn't do them, you know.
No, not at all, exactly. Yeah. Like in that one, the character goes down and he gets attacked by muggers, and the twist is that because he's not no insurance for the police basically say, well, we're going to have to let these criminals go because you're not covered. And then like a superhero comes along who's essentially paid by a corporation to shell product, and he sort of warns them off. And in the meantime, tries to flog his product to the person he saved. And that's kind of like the twist on it.
Yeah.
But, kind of just, I mentioned further on that point is, if you're going to do that, and it's just, that scene's essentially about introducing your character into the story so the readers can see, right, this is what this character does, blah, blah, blah. But try to make a point of, if your story's about, like, help, your character's going to be very social justice driven, maybe you could be tackling thugs that are trying to push out residents from like a slum tenant's house thing. Do you know, like a slumlord trying to get evict tenants, and he stops them or she stops them, or just trying to make the theme of that initial sequence tie into the whole theme of the comic rather than just having a stock scene. Do you know what I mean?
And also, I think you shouldn't have it as your first scene. Do you know what I mean?
No.
I think there should be a build up to that eventual scene. That's me personally. What do I know?
We're just generally
it's
an opening
easy,
up.
Obvious intro scene that people should avoid as an easy option to go to start with.
Yeah,
be a bit original.
Yeah,
we've all seen Marvel comics throughout, you know, for years having fights in alleyways.
Yeah,
just get over it. Yeah,
I mean, you've read a fair few comics in your time, Tony. You must have seen this many.
Yeah,
times.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'll tell you what. No spoilers, but. Doesn't it happen in quite a few of the Netflix series as well?
Yes, I was going to say that, you know, how many times when you have a sort of night vigilante type, and this is from any person, it's not just Marvel or DC or whatever, you know, and some will get pulled into the shadows. You know, the muggers get picked off one by one by someone you can't see. That happens all the time.
There you go.
But if done right, it can be bloody cool.
I mean, Moore kind of was sending this up when he first did Watchmen. I'm sure it'd be sent up before then. But remember, it's got the two characters, Dan and Silk Spectre. I can't remember her name, but they kind of get into a fight in an alley, and it's kind of taking the mick out of that, and kind of the characters getting over personal issues themselves. But
it goes super violent, doesn't it? Yeah,
yeah, this trope's been around for a long time, and like I said, not don't disregard it, but just consider it a little bit more.
Yeah,
there's a reason why, you know, film noir has a cliche called Crime Alley. Let's face it.
Yeah,
you know, for exactly the same reason. Yeah.
But one of the things that I've mentioned at the front, beginning of the article, people had said are tired of the superhero genre, and it's because people are doing the same things all the time. So I can understand where you pick up another comic and it's like a checklist of 100 comics you've seen before. It's kind of
well, that's what inspired you to write this article as well, wasn't it? Really, you know, it's,
exactly.
It's don't put don't put the superhero genre down just because you see a lot of it.
Yeah, I love superhero comics still.
Yeah, yeah, I think absolutely. They're great.
Yeah, there's loads you can do with them. Yeah. All right, the next one is my favourite one.
Right, do you want to say it, Tony?
Right, number two, Think Spawn meets Deadpool, in little quotes.
Yeah.
But I am so fucking bored of people who have read some, it's usually some pitch book, you know, how to pitch your movie in Hollywood, you know, in five words. And they think saying, I heard one recently, well, a couple of years ago now, that was, it's like Buffy meets the Sweeney. And I thought, and I read this book and I thought, well, one, it's neither, and it can't be both. And it's just fucking nothing like that. But it's just this sort of easy, stupid shortcut that people use these days, isn't it? You know, it's like, oh, really? So boring. It's neither, is it? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, this takes sort of two properties that you are doing fairly well and going to mash them up and say you're going to do something even better.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous. You're not. It's just not going to happen.
I heard one recently, it's Austin Powers meets the Rolling Stones, and I thought, that makes no fucking sense.
No sense. I mean, we touched on this, like trying to make a character better than a knockoff character, better than another original character that's got a multi-million dollar, multinational corporation behind it.
Yeah.
You're going to fail. You're going to fail.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about shorthand sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm not defending this, by the way, but certainly, if you're trying to sell it to certain people, and you sort of say, "If you like this, then you might like this."
Yeah,
that can put. I've seen that pull people in. Mm. Certainly, with other creators' comics, you know, they've said to people, "Well, if you're a fan of, I don't know, this sci-fi TV show, you'll like this," and then they've sold issues because of it. But if you, especially that Spawn meets Deadpool one.
I think comparisons are inevitable, and I certainly use them in reviews, and it allows it's almost a shortcut for certain things.
Yeah.
Just don't, you know, base your whole like super original idea around it's like Deadpool meets Spawn. Well, they're the fucking same character, let's face it, pretty much.
And it also,
at one period in their careers they were very similar.
And it also it says something about the pitch, as it were. Now I remember when I got one of our guests taught me a new one about the term pitch. But it was less about trying to pitch a movie. Like whenever it's that sort of discussion that you have with someone at your table when they don't know your comic and you have to describe it. Now, if someone said to me, it's Spawn meets Deadpool, and they leave it at that, I'll be like, and I've walked on to the next table. If they've sort of said, well, this character does this, this, and this, you know, if a creator is passionate about their project, I've bought the book. Do you know what I mean? And that was, I remember when I was at Bristol and John Locke, the first time I ever met John Locke, and I sort of said, well, what's this about then? I've seen Afterlife Inc. about, what's it about? And he sold me, you know, just immediately on what it was, because it wasn't just, if you like this, you'll like this. He went into the story and why it's, you know, all the things going on. You know, I don't know. It goes back to laziness, really, doesn't it?
If he'd have said it's John Constantine meets the role, you know, meets the Doors, I'd have punched him in the face.
Remember that, John. For God's sake, remember that.
One of the other things I mentioned that one is the a lot of comics do the Spider-Man quipping as they're fighting. And it's just like, why are you doing this? I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but some reason you have like a really dark character and then suddenly they're kind of making these really weak jokes and puns while fighting the bad guys. It just doesn't, you're doing this because you've seen it somewhere else.
When people create characters or superheroes, they almost think it's got to fit into one of those categories. They think it's, you know, it's either a Batman or it's a Punisher or it's a Spider-Man or it's a Superman. There's certain little niches for characters sometimes, and people make the mistake, they're going, oh, it's going to be a sort of Superman character, or it's going to be, you know, a sort of Dark Avenger character. But no, there's a world of different things you can do to make a character, yeah. Not just these cliches.
I think when I first started Vanguard, I kind of shot myself in the foot initially, because these characters are supposed to be these archetypes. Yeah. They've been designed right. That way. So, like, when if someone looks at Vanguard, it's like, well, that looks like Captain America, that looks like so-and-so. And it's like, well, they're in the story, they've been designed to look like these archetypes you'd imagine to be. And then, obviously, that gets kind of shredded and taken apart later on.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if that's kind of too self-aware of that, and that doesn't come across to the reader. I don't know. Especially on initial glances, that's what I always thought. But, yeah. It's a learning process.
But once you get into your story becomes something else entirely. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many more layers to it. And where you are with it now, Jesus, you know.
See, that's completely a million miles away from what it was.
Yeah.
But
it's always been good, Dan.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
The moment of self-doubt again there.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah, number three.
Yeah. Okay.
Is I swear to uphold all the justice.
Now, I will say this, on your website, VanguardComic.com, it says, I swear to upload all the justice.
I'll tell you what, I can go in and edit that right now.
Yeah. There's justice being uploaded everywhere, all over your face, neck and chest.
I wonder if John corrected that on the Down the Tubes one. I bet he did.
Probably.
I've got the Down the Tubes one in front of me. I swear to uphold all justice.
Ah, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So what do you mean by this one, Dan?
Essentially, they, with a lack of origin story, with the origin story, more than often than not, creators seem to go to the I've lost a loved one routine all the time. They've lost right. someone that cares, they care about, and that's the reason they're doing what they're doing.
Okay.
It's just all the time, so, oh, I've lost my policeman brother, I've lost my mother, I've lost my dad, and this is the reason I'm doing it. Yeah. And it's like, there's so many more motivations and more interesting motivations than that. I'm not saying that the Spider-Man one isn't good or the Batman one isn't good, but when you tell the Batman one hundreds and hundreds of times, I mean, we don't want to see Spider-Man the origin again in a film. We know the Spider-Man origin. We know the Batman origin.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, I was thinking that exactly today. I was thinking, I do not want to see the new, in the new Spider-Man movie, I don't want an origin. You know.
If the origin story is summed up in the credit sequence at the beginning, I'm fine with that.
Kind of acceptable. Yeah. But
I mean,
you know, like in Spider-Man 2, where you got the Alex Ross.
Oh yeah, that was great.
It did go on for a fucking long time.
Oh yeah. But
if you can just deal with it there, that's fine.
I need to watch that again to see how long it lasts. Actually,
it's a long time.
Yeah. but you're right. That, you know, the character death and. I don't know. It's not to say that point is not important, is it?
Not at all. But like, the stock, I've lost a loved one, and then the motivation I'm going to need. Surely there's more interesting things to write about. Why are you going to do that?
And also, I think from a story standpoint, especially these days, I'll bring up Invincible for this. I think in terms of like. The death of loved ones is far more effective. When you've gotten to know them, and you know, you build up these characters, and then these are real moments. Do you know what I mean? How it's a bit more difficult these days to sort of sympathise with someone who's lost a character who you don't really know. Does that make sense?
For me, it's just more that kind of that initial origin story of the motivation of why this person's doing what they're doing, that's the sole reason.
Yeah.
I mean, when someone dies within the comic and then they go on to do that, that's fine. I mean,
I think if just say we had this Batman character now, someone's created a Batman character with that same thing. If someone's going to do that, I would say, you know, one thing you should do is talk about those people that they've lost. Let us know why those people were important, rather than just they're dead, I'm going to avenge you. Do you know what I mean? Otherwise, they're just a plot point, really, aren't they? Whereas they should be characters. I think the reader has to feel the loss. If that makes sense.
A lot of people like origin stories, and I don't. I find them a bit dull. I like a character because of what he does. So I like, I don't know, Iron Fist because he does kung fu on the streets of New York. I'm not actually that overly fussed about learning about his training program
to learn how he learned to do kung fu. I'd rather just like throw yourself straight into it and have the odd flashback. You know, these. I think a lot of comics now, because there's that sort of decompressed style, you'll get 6 issues of Origin. I'm thinking, no, just get to it. I want to see it. Come on, get to it. You know, it's like that. Especially with a lot of the TV series, I think, as well.
Yeah. I mean, Dark Knight, I'm not sure if you got... Is it you don't like him, Tony? You don't like Nolan films?
I don't like what, sorry?
The Nolan films.
No, I just don't like Christian Bale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, I find him really annoying and childlike.
The Dark Knight, you're straight away in this Batman, and you're into the story, and it's great.
Yeah.
You don't need any of that kind of stuff. And I find, especially with the films, we've done the origin story, and then they're fucked. They don't know what to do with it. Spider-Man 2 being an exception to that.
Yeah.
And Dark Knight, obviously. But I'm trying to think of many secret hero films where they've had a sequel. Blade 2, that was excellent.
Oh, I love Blade 2. Absolutely, it's love really good. Blade 2. Yeah.
That
was a film that didn't really... That was a series of films that didn't really talk much about his origin as much. Anyway, did they? They sort of dealt with it.
Dealt with it,
and then let's just get on with like him killing lots of people.
Yeah.
The thing is, like Marvel and DC used to have like almost like one or two pages of origin, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they'd be, you know, then you'd be right into the proper. You'd be fighting Sandman or, you know, something like that. You know, I prefer that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I used it in issue one because I did the origin issue of Red Mask. Because that was the first thing I did. It was like, right, that's done now. You know, when I get into the first story, you know. And I put it in, I referenced it in the first issue, first time you see him, where you have that sort of the origin is written around him. And I did it very much in homage to the way that Marvel used to do it. You know, those small bits of text that before the story series started, you know, what Spider, Peter Parker was just a blah, 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 blah. I used to love those when I was a kid as well. It didn't, you know, I didn't read them every time because, you know it. But yeah, so there you go. That's something for the Red Mask.
Yeah, I want to read about the Fantastic Four fighting their way through space, or you know, the Avengers fighting, you know, the Masters of Evil or something. I don't really need to know about how, you know, Hank Pym got his powers, or just move on, get on with it. I want to see the fighting. You know, it's almost like that. I think sometimes. Okay.
Dear. Anyway, number four. Is, for God's sake, people, stow the splash pages and get some feedback.
This was initially just going to be the splash pages that I see so much in comics, but it incorporated more with the feedback element of, we've mentioned it so many times on this show, indie comics, web comics generally, the production values within the past couple of years, 10 years, whatever, it's going up a lot.
Yeah.
And you need to be putting out the best, and that includes your art, writing, colouring, whatever. I've mentioned it on this, but like your script, before you even start drawing your comic, you need to have a decent script and get someone to read it over who you trust and who can give you feedback, and you can't get arsy about it, because what you want to do is put out the best comic you can, and getting feedback and making changes to make it better is what you're going to have to do.
Yeah. And, you know, from a personal standpoint as well, splash pages... For me, if it's a splash page in a story, it's a page of your story. Do you know what I mean? That's it's not a pin-up. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not one of those sections. I mean, I've done splash pages in my comics, but I hope that I use them effectively as a story point. You know, so if I want these moments for people to go, oh my god, something big has happened there, the splash page earns it. Whereas I think some people,
well, like in Red Mask 3, the double splash page. That's totally warranted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God.
That's totally warranted.
But that would be, but when I thought about that, you know, it was like, this is a big scene that, you know, how can I, the splash page would be the best way to do that. It wasn't, and that, you can never say you could pin that, you could take those two pages up and pin them up on your wall, because it's a story splash page.
Yeah. But I think webcomics are different, aren't they? A webcomic, if it's something you're ingesting twice a week or something, then you're right, you're completely right about the splash page. But if I'm reading an issue of, you know, the Avengers or something, I quite like that big, like, big example of that artist's art, you know.
To be honest, I don't mind splash. I've not got a really big problem with splash pages, but it's in the thing, a reaction to that. I've seen a lot of comics that might have like two panels per page.
Yeah.
It's virtually a whole issue is fighting with splash pages, massive, great big pictures of just characters. And it's just like, what? If I read a whole comic like that, I don't want to see any more of this.
Yeah, you look at something like
no story.
You look at Miller or Gallese or someone like that, their fights, they'll have 10 panels on a page.
Yeah.
You know, for a fight, and the movement of it is just brilliant. You know, you've got to look at some of those Electra Bullseye, you know, Daredevil Frank Miller pages of him fighting, and it looks amazing. You don't just have to have two panels on a page, you know, it's just complete lots of waste.
Yeah.
You know?
It's one of those things where you want the splash page to be the fight. If you're going to do that in a fight sequence, for instance, you use that splash page as the final punch, you know, that knocks someone out.
Mm. There's a fantastic spread that Kirkman does in one Invincible book, and he does it again in another, where it's a double page splash of the two characters fighting, but then behind like just covered in panels of various punches and blows, and it gives a real sense of time with these characters like slugging it out, but then kind of the nice design element of the two characters superimposed over the top of the panels.
Which Invincible artist is it that does that? Is it Ryan Ottley?
Ryan Ottley.
He's a beast.
He is a beast.
Yeah. So that's our thoughts about splash pages. We love them, but just use them.
Yeah.
Just use them
properly. Use them right. Yeah. And finally,
now we're going to say what this is, and I have to say the first line in the article as well, because I think this is an amazing line. Now, number five is anti-heroes. If every hero is an anti-hero, then none of them are. Genius! Genius! Yeah. Where did you get that from, Dan?
From Incredibles.
Who's that from Incredibles, is it? I've never seen Incredibles.
That's good.
You should watch that, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, that syndrome character says, because he's going to give away superpowers to everyone. And he said, if everyone has superpowers, if everyone's special, no one is.
Yeah.
And it's weird, because I've had a commenter that said they thought this article was going to be all about saying, make your characters edgy and anti-heroes and Superman and all those kind of nice, well-rounded characters. I'm not saying either. I'm saying that if you make every character of yours an edgy badass wearing a leather jacket blowing people away, and they're all like that, then none of them are real badasses, are they? Because there's no standard. There's like no benchmark.
Yeah.
If everyone's dark and gritty, everyone's dark and gritty. You've got to have a kind of a tonality. Like if you have a really violent character, you've got to have a really peaceful, passive character to kind of offset it.
You've only got to look at Garth Ennis's The Boys. He proper played on that, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, nobody was a hero.
Well, there was one story arc where there was a group of characters that he plays it. One of the things I liked about it, because it seemed like every single superhero was an absolute arsehole, and there's one story arc where there's a bunch of young heroes in that story, and they are all really good people, and they're really good heroes, and I love that he's not just completely shitting all over the genre. You know, he's talking about individual people, isn't he?
That's not talked about enough, that series. You know, I really like The Boys, and then he did a spin-off called Butcher Baker, which was about the sort of leader of the boys, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, and he did Highland Laddie. He's done like
That Butcher Baker series, I was really impressed with, because it's quite a touching sort of.
I never read that one. War. I read a lot of The Boys.
Really.
I love the last arc of The Boys is bloody heartbreaking for me. But I think that story. Sorry, we're getting off point again. But that story, I think, because of like the over the top sort of. Could you say exploitation sort of scenes, or the shocking scenes? People talk about that, and they forget about the heart underneath. That's what I think.
Really good series, but, really, really good. Yeah.
But back to anti-heroes. You just got to check out this article, people, just to see this cover that Dan's done.
That was for a few years ago for a competition on Intercomics. It was about making an anti-hero. So I did a mock-up cover for, what was it again?
It was Gunstrike, the Broken Blade Chronicles, and...
Yeah, and the tagline was, in a post-apocalyptic future, one man wages a shadow war against the demonic overlords that plot to destroy us.
But then in the bottom left, you got Holochromatic 3D Blood Edition, Feel the Pain.
Yeah, available. Eight blood types.
And I think
subtle swipe at Image Comics.
Yeah,
yeah.
We've all got boxes full of those rubbish issues, haven't we? Let's face it.
Yeah.
I liked them at the time. There's no.
Yeah, I could just think they thought they were absolute bee's knees when I was reading them. But he's sort of now, you're like, oh Christ.
I have to admit, I looking back on it, and this is not a dig, but this is genuinely how I felt at the time. I remember reading some of these comics and thinking everyone is going mental about how good these comics are.
Hmm.
Is there something that I don't understand?
No.
They don't look very good to me, some of these.
I think it was the massive case of the Emperor's New Clothes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Bad Rock versus Violator or something like that. And you're thinking, really? Yeah. Why is everyone going mad for this? Is it actually good? I don't understand. Yeah.
Just don't get it.
Yeah. But no, it was brilliant, Michael, mate. Yeah, absolutely good. And John did exactly the right thing and picked it up. I'm so glad he did. Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
I'm glad you liked it.
You'll never get away from us now. We'll be getting you to write articles all the time.
You've become one of the cult. If they offer you any punch, Dan, don't drink it. Right?
Blew us out to Emily.
Yeah.
He's a gang now.
I've got another article in the pipeline.
Oh, nice. I'm starting
to write it, yeah. That'd probably take me as long as that one did, which is about a fucking month to write.
That's right.
Yeah, so, that's because you thought about it, and also you're the busiest man in comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what shout-outs have we got this week, gents? Any?
Daniel?
I've got three.
Oh.
A lie. The first one is a friend of the show, Gavin Mitchell. He's got a book out, which is called... Santa Claus
versus the Nazis.
That's the one. I just fucked up the page on the. I had all ready to go on the browser, and it fucked up.
That's right, yeah.
Santa Claus versus the Nazis. You can get it from Marcosia, Marcosia.com, and it's on sale now for £9. So you save £4.99.
Awesome.
It's 112 pages, written by Ben Dixon, and artist is Gavin Mitchell. The synopsis for this book is 1941. After discovering Santa Claus's factory, the Nazis enslave the elves, incapacitate Santa, convert the factory into a factory of war. Two of Santa's helpers escape to London to brief Churchill, who creates a commando unit to take the factory back. And that's available in print at November 2016. So,
cool. Yeah, that's going to be a thought bubble, I believe. I think it's going to be a thought bubble.
Yeah, that's nice in the release, aren't they? Yeah. Talking of 2000 AD, Gavin is one of the people who should be working with them, I believe.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's so good. Yeah.
He's an absolute art beast. There's a couple of people that are kind of up on the radar, the Awesome Pod radar, and he's definitely one that should be on it. Second one.
Sorry, just quickly to intervene on that one. Speaking of which, how good is it that Chris Wildgoose is getting such... a great load of feedback about his starting on Batgirl.
That's brilliant.
So good to see.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
He's ready for the prime time, and he by a long way. Yeah. He's
I just hope we do get book three of Porcelain.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I'd like to see that story brought to a conclusion.
Yeah.
And
it
has to be drawn by him. I mean, I don't want to see another artist do that.
No, I don't either. I think there's some news on that, actually, which I don't think I can say about, but...
Okay.
Yeah, I'll tell
good
you
news?
Afterwards. Yeah, very good news. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Second one is by Kickstart, The Axeman Cometh by Daryl Smith. Kickstart page, I'll give you the link in the... Well, Vince will give you the link in the show notes, and I'll give the link to Vince.
Cheers, mate.
So, The Axeman Cometh is a spine-tingling southern gothic crime noir thriller that will keep you guessing till the very end. So go check out that one. And finally, A Place to Hang Your Cape, are doing a charity calendar, which Vince and I have both done artwork for. They asked children to send in drawings of their superhero characters, and then get 12 comic book artists to redraw them in their own style, so you can see the two side by side. And it's all for a charity called Something Against Bullying, which slips my mind. Can you remember the name of the charity, Vince?
It slips my mind as well, but any charity that's against bullying is an amazing charity. So
unless it's about you.
Well, you bully me every week, so I just I'm hoping they can help me out.
Right, this week.
Yeah, it's true.
You're gonna write.
Give it time.
So yeah, go and check that out. I think it's on GoFundMe for another few days after this podcast comes out. Go check it out. It's very worthy cause. So yeah,
cool.
Do it.
Cool. And I've just got one shout. I just want to give a shout out to the Maddiest boys, who sent me a copy of Gris Gristle, Griff Gristle, not Gris Gristle.
Yeah, I've got mine for as well.
Yeah, nice. It's a lovely, lovely looking book, actually. I sort of did a pin-up for them as well, so they sent me a copy of that along with all the other pin-ups and badges and stuff, and a T-shirt, and it all came out great. So
cool.
Thank you very much, boys. It was very cool. We spoke about it on the show before. I think it's one of the best things
we've
they've
had,
done.
Is it Rory, isn't it, is the artist? Yeah, Rory Donald, is that right?
We spoke to him at London Super Comic Con.
We did, yeah. He's a good egg, actually. Really, really, real up-and-comer. Talking to people who like their games, like just up in and up and up, and he's doing really well. I love his watch. I love looking at his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. I've got two, maybe three. I've got... I got to see the last issue of Monologue today.
Oh, brilliant.
Nice.
He's let me talk about it. I had a chat with Stuart earlier, and I have to say, you will not be let down. I absolutely loved it.
Oh, nice one.
All I'm going to say is, I can't give any spoilers out, but I'm going to say David Lynch would be proud of the dialogue in it. I've got to tell you, really good. Yeah, so watch out for that. It's coming soon. Are we all in this anthology, the Nottingham one?
I am.
Yeah, we all are, aren't we? Yeah, yeah. So please go to the Nottingham Comic Con anthology. It's called Forest Tales. The cover is gorgeous and done by Dean Beattie, and all of us have got work in this, including a lot of people who've been on the show and a lot of listeners to the show. I know Matt Strott's got a page in it as well, which is great to see because Matt's a good lad. And that is up on Kickstarter. They've gone past the amount, but there's still six more days to go. Yeah. So please pledge to it. And it's going to be it's a fun one, and it's for charity. Nottingham Comic Con is run to support a number of charities, which are all detailed on the page. So go over there and have a look at that.
Cool.
And my last one is, the day after you listen to this, if you listen to it on the day it comes out, I shall be at the New York Comic Con with the countdown on my phone. I'm very excited. And if you are at the comic convention, please seek me out. I'll be on Twitter. Hit me up on Twitter, and we might do a quick interview. So I'm really looking forward to going to it. There's all manner of people who are friends of ours, Vanda, Lamming, Matt Harrower, Vera Greentree, loads of people who we all love are going to be there, so it's going to be a great event. So say hello.
Awesome. Brilliant. Awesome.
Yeah.
Right, so normally we'd have the recommendation section, but we're not going to this week because that's how we roll.
Yeah.
And you can't tell us what to do because you're not my mum.
Fuck you. We've got a few bits of news coming, haven't we? Which I think you'll probably mention in a minute, won't you?
Probably.
Maybe.
Depends what you're talking about.
Oh, no, not that news. Nobody knows about that, Vince.
Oh, right, good, good, because I need to wait until the tests are back.
Anthony Daniel Hunt. I think that's a good name for a boy.
Yeah. God. I'd say so.
Yeah, I think so.
God, yes. Yes, it's been a chock-a-block show this week, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
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 Yeah, we have properly chocked our block.
That's a good little talking point there. I really like that article. Yeah, nice.
Oh, cheers.
Yes, the article was fantastic. Did you like it, folks, out there? I'm talking to you. Yes, you.
Oh, no.
Sitting there. why don't you get in touch with us? Go on. You know you want to. What do you think of that article? What do you think of Tony's sort of sexy voice?
Yeah, right in.
Yeah.
My phone number is 0779.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things with that article, it's like a roundtable discussion that we're looking to do more of.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Because essentially we was getting concerned about the format of the show.
Yeah.
And although we don't necessarily do this for listeners, we do like people to actually listen to it and interact with us.
Yeah.
And I think
it's always good to interact, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So
I think people were getting a bit turned off with the way we were doing stuff.
So next week we're going to tell you,
what our news is.
We've been having a think in Awesome Pod HQ about what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So next week, we're going to tell you what you've got to look forward to and how you can get involved, because it is also about audience interaction, would you say?
Yeah.
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 Don't call it a reboot.
No. Never a reboot. Maybe it's the new 52 or new 52 now. That's what we can call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that's a stupid name, folks? If you think it is, then email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Do you hate my segues? Then email tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Please do. Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, Like us on Facebook, get involved. There was lots of stuff to talk about this week, and there will be more coming forth. Facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Tony and Dan always get involved on that page, so it's always a good time.
We get a lot of views on there, don't we?
We do.
We're trying to generate a bit of discussion, a bit of...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we're all about the discussion and just...
I was going to post that story about the actors taking home garbage bags full of money.
Oh, that was a bit fucking depressing. Oh, we're going to talk
about... Andrew Lincoln, who came out of it well, didn't he?
Cause he does... Oh, yeah.
Good old Andy Links. Yeah, we'll be talking about that soon. And, yeah, thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. It helps get the name out. And apparently, the more reviews you have, the more people check out the podcast. Did you know this, lads?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Didn't know that.
There you go. So, if you like this episode...
So, if we've ever featured your comic on the show, it'd be very much appreciated if you leave a review.
Please, we'll be your best friend. Likewise, our best friends that listen to us via Stitcher, thank you very much. If you listen to us on the Podnose Network, thank you very much indeed. Where can people find us on Twitter, etc.?
EzoYez, or you can find me in the review section at Down the Tubes.
Daniel?
And I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Which you should.
Thank you.
Currently, I'm on the edge of my seat. I want to see someone get mashed up. and he's really eking it out.
I want an anti-hero in a back alley.
Yeah.
Nothing but pouches and guns.
Framed by the moonlight.
It's like, imagine Spawn meets Deadpool. That's what I want to say. And you can find me on Twitter.
Lady Death meets Vampirella.
Oh, Lady Death! Jesus, classic. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic, The Red Mask, at theredmaskfrommars.com. You can also get issue 3 of it on Comixology now.
Nice one.
Yeah, it's live now. Go get it, people. It's fun comics for all the family. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
Because this run's 4, isn't it?
This one's 3, the next one's 4.
I mean,
that's how numbers work, Dan.
No, I mean, it's like a 4-issue miniseries.
It's 5.
Five,
so,
okay.
Yeah. So this is the...
Because this one builds up to a big crescendo.
Yeah, I know.
So you promised to have the last 2 out this year, haven't you?
This year?
Yeah. You said to me, I'll have them out by the end of the year. I quote...
I wasn't talking about comics.
He's talking about something else.
I'll slip a ball out either side.
Do my elephant impression.
Oh, dear God. It's time to sign off, folks. Thank you for listening. Check us out next week for important news, and as always, yes, from Dan, Tony and myself, stay fruity, stay beautiful, eat your 5 a day, and as always, read comics and stay awesome. See ya.
And there's this eyeball looking like weirdly looking from side to side. So I hit the hole in the wall with my fist and made a loud bang, and then quickly, wiped and ran off. And then I walked off. The skeezer was still walking around in the cubicle. So I fucking banged on the door, shouted something rude, and then thought, oh, they might call the police. So I legged it.
Nice. Did you wipe your bum?
Yeah.
Do you feel a bit weird that he was looking through? Was he looking while you was wiping?
Sort of, it was like this disembodied eye looking through this hole.
That would really put me off, I'd have to say.
I've done most of my business by then, though. I've done it, I don't like that. Because I'm vegetarian, don't like long meat, do you know what I mean?
It
goes through you like a bullet train, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Just like, I kind of sometimes just squat on the toilet like I'm a little bird and do like that, and it's done.
Just comes out.
Yeah.
Linda McCartney's shotgun attack. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, pebble dash the driveway and off we go.
I want to talk about comics and also talk about making comics with people. I don't necessarily want to
fucking and making love
for Kickstarters. Yeah,
I will make love to your face.
So no, wait, I didn't even fucking do that.
Yeah, here we've got Vince busy making love to my face. All they do is watch. Don't even help out.
Dan's looking through the hole in the cubicle next door.
Greedily taking in the details.
I am brother I.